I stood still. If I was Lila, I would have one guy in each of the two rooms dead ahead. I would have them listening hard with weapons drawn. I would have them ready to fling open their doors and start up two parallel fields of fire. They could get me going up or coming down. But I wasn't Lila, and she wasn't me. I had no idea of her likely deployment. Except that as her numbers diminished, I felt she would want to keep her remaining guys reasonably close, which would put them on the third floor, not the second, because the flutter I had seen had been at a fourth-floor window. At the fourth-floor window on the left, to be precise, looking at the building from the outside, which meant her room was the room on the right, looking at it from the inside. I doubted that there would be any significant difference in the floor plans as I went up. It was a cheap, utilitarian structure, no call for custom features. Therefore, a walk through the second-floor room on the right would be the same thing as a walk through Lila's room two floors above. It would give me the lie of the land. I squeezed the slack out of the MP5's trigger and put my gloved fingers on the door handle. Pushed down, felt the latch let go. I opened the door. An empty room. In fact, an empty and part-demolished studio apartment. It was as deep as, but half the width of, the restaurant dining room below. A long, narrow space. A closet in back, a bathroom, a kitchenette, and a living area. I could see the layout at a single glance because all the dividing walls had been torn back to the studs. The bathroom fitments were all still there. Odd and naked behind a vertical array of old 2x4s, like ribs, like the spaced bars of a cage. The kitchen equipment was intact. The floors were pine boards except for ragged-edged old-fashioned mosaic in the bathroom and linoleum tile in the kitchen. The whole place smelled of vermin and rotten plaster. The window over the street was black with soot. It was bisected diagonally by the bottom of the fire escape. I walked quietly to the window. The fire escape was a standard design. A narrow iron ladder came down from the floor above and gave onto a narrow iron walkway under the windows themselves. Beyond the walkway, a counterbalanced section lay ready to fold down toward the sidewalk under the weight of a fleeing person. The window was a sash design. The lower pane was designed to slide upward inside the upper pane. Where the panes met, they were locked together with a simple brass tongue in a slot. The lower pane had brass handles like the ones you see on old file cabinets. The handles had been painted over many times. So had the window frames. I undid the lock and put three fingers into each of the handles and heaved. The frame moved an inch and stuck. I increased the pressure. I got close to the force I had used on the barred cages in the firehouse basement. The frame shuddered upward an inch at a time, sticking on the left, sticking on the right, fighting me all the way. I got my shoulder under the bottom rail and straightened my legs. The frame moved another 8 inches and jammed solid. I stepped back. Night air came in at me. Total gap? About 20 inches. More than enough. I got one leg out, bent at the waist, ducked through, got the other leg out. The phone vibrated in my pocket. I ignored it. I went up the iron ladder, one slow, quiet step after another. Halfway up, my head was at the level of the third floor sills, and I could see both front room windows. Both had closed drapes, old, soot-colored cotton material behind soot-stained glass. No apparent light inside, no sounds, no evidence of activity. I turned and looked down at the street. No pedestrians. No passers-by, no traffic. I moved on upward, to the fourth story. Same result, dirty glass, closed drapes. I paused a long time under the window where I had seen movement, or imagined movement. I heard nothing and sensed nothing. I moved up to the fifth floor. The fifth floor was different. No drapes. Empty rooms. The floors were stained and the ceiling sagged and bowed. Rainwater leaks. The fifth floor windows were locked. The same simple brass tongue and slot mechanisms I had seen below. But there was nothing I could do about them without busting the glass, which would make noise, which I was prepared to do. But not yet. I wanted to time it right. I hauled the strap around until the MP5 hung down my back, and I got a foot up on the windowsill. I stepped up and grabbed the crumbling cornice high above my head. I heaved myself over it. Not an elegant process. I am no kind of a graceful gymnast. I finished up, panting, and sprawled face down on the roof with a face full of weeds. I lay there for a second to get my breath, and then I got to my knees and looked around for a trap door. I found one about 40 feet back, right above where I judged the stairwell hallway would be. It was a simple, shallow, upside-down wooden box, sheathed in lead and hinged on one side. Presumably locked from below, probably with a hasp and a padlock. The padlock would be strong, but the hasp would be screwed into the frame, and the frame would be weak from age and rot and water damage. No contest. Standard tactical doctrine for any assault. Attack from the high ground. Chapter 80. The lead sheet around the trapdoor lid had been beaten with felt hammers into gentle curves. No sharp corners. I got my gloved fingers under the edge opposite the hinge and yanked hard. No result. So I got serious. Two hands, eight fingers, bent legs, deep breath. I closed my eyes. I didn't want to think about Peter Molina, so instead I pictured Lila Hoth's insane smile at the camera right after she checked the cobbled taxi driver's departed pulse. I jerked the lid, and the night started to unravel, right there and then. I had hoped that the hasp's screws would pull out of either the door or the frame, but they pulled out of both, together. The padlock with the hasp still attached. Free fell 10 feet and thumped hard on the bare wooden floor below. A loud, emphatic, tympanic sound. Deep, resonant, and clear, followed immediately by the tinkle of the hasp itself and the patter of six separate screws.